Blog Talk Radio.
You have joined us for tonight's show. I need to first remind you that the opinions expressed on this show may or may not be endorsed by Trans Women National, TWN Radio, Prism Radio, or myself. Each individual owns their opinion on this show. Most Prism Radio shows are suitable for all ages, but it is recommended that listeners should be at least 16 years old. If you're listening live, you can call in at 914-205-5655. That number is at the top of the screen. But please be patient as it may take a few moments to get you connected. If you want to join our live Facebook chat, please go to facebook.com/PrismRadio. My name is Holly Knight, and I will be your host for Prism Radio. So let's get the show started. Okay, hello everyone, this is Holly and this is Prism Radio, and I think it is my 97th show. It's hard to keep track at this point, but extremely excited. We have Victoria Simone Taylor. Most of you probably know her as Simone, and she's very well known in the metro Louisville area, but also in a region and many places across the country. So we're going to get to her in a few minutes. We're going to talk about her life and how she got to where she is today and some of the struggles that she's gone through and some of the successes and all that kind of stuff. Feel free to give us a call if you wanted to call and say hi to Simone. You can call at 914-205-5655. That's 914-205-5655. Just to remind you that I will be watching the screen, so if you call, but I'm not going to answer the phone in the middle of the conversation, so just kind of hang out there a little bit, and then when we get a break, we'll get to your call if we get a chance to there. So, again, we have Simone here. Hello, Simone.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Cool. Well, I wanted to tell you that there for many years, every Saturday night I would see you on stage, and now every Wednesday night lately I've been seeing you at Chill at your DJ booth, which is really, really cool. What I would like to, Simone, for people, because I know if a lot of people are like myself, they've seen you perform, they've seen you around the community, and you and I have known each other off and on for a while, but we really never sit down, and I do have regrets on that, but we really have never sit down and had a really good conversation. So if you wouldn't mind, kind of tell some people some of your background, where you're from, and some of the things early in your life that got you to the point before you got on stage.
All righty. I was born to Darling Allen and Charles Brown Jr. My parents divorced when I was young, and I grew up in South Louisville by Churchill Downs. I was born in St. Anthony's Hospital. My mom likes to remind me of that. I had a fairly normal childhood. I had a biological sister, a half-brother, two stepsisters, and a stepbrother. And my father married again, of course. And I was encouraged to be myself and be expressive. And we had a normal childhood for, blue collar people, I guess.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was going to say normal, of course, is relative, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, when you're growing up as a kid, I did what everybody else did. We mm-hmm. played in the park. We rode our bikes. We, walked from place to place. It was, typical childhood.
Yeah.
I think growing up, I grew up around a lot of amazing women, my aunts, my mom, just my cousins, just amazing women. So I had some very incredible female role models growing up.
Yeah, cool.
I think I guess before I hit the stage, I mean, I was interested in dance and music. My father loved music, and I think that that's where I get a lot of my love for music and my love for performing. I get from my father, and he encouraged me to just, love the music and didn't find my antics to be weird.
Yeah, did now at the time at that point saying that were there people in your family and your neighborhood, people around that did find your antics weird?
I would think that it was people in our neighborhood or, people who didn't know me. My family was completely secure with the idea that they had of me in the beginning, which was, had I chosen to be gay, they were prepared for that. That was something that they were prepared for. I think after a while, they realized that it was something else, and it took us a minute to, to confront that. But I mean, my parents didn't throw me away. My family didn't shun me for it. They allowed me to make my own decisions, good or bad. I was never beat down with the Bible or told that I was wrong. I was allowed to make my own mistakes and, or go my own way. And if they had any problems with it, they kept their comments to themselves.
Right. Did now that type of upbringing clearly had to have a positive impact of in as you experience the world coming forward.
Yeah, I was pretty brave. I mean, the thing is that I was very unfiltered at a young age. I was just ready to do whatever it is that I wanted to do. I got to, I mean, my of course, when you're a kid and you're different, I did some things that probably made my father cringe a little bit.
Yeah.
Performing in on the porch for the neighborhood in my aunt's high heel shoes, and
Yeah.
Loving Janet Jackson because that's what I used to perform on the porch.
Yeah.
I think I was brave, and you lose a little bit of that when you step out into the world, when you get a little
Yeah.
older, because you think you overthink things. You think, well, I don't want to offend someone. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. But when you're a kid, I mean, the sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want. I think
Right.
it's when you experience the world and know that there are other people with opinions that things change for you.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming I don't know this for at all, but when I first started going out to the connection, you were already like I remember, and I tell this story all the time, but I remember when I first started going out there, when you came out the stage. If anybody has been at the connection, it's you get these two aisles of stairs, and people would literally line up to the almost to the exit just to view. I mean, it was like immediately. And so when I first got there, that was already going on. So you've been there a little while. When I'm not sure if you don't want to say when, but your process to say I'm going to be obviously you got music in the background and dance and that kind of stuff is probably was a natural transition, so to speak, for you.
Yeah, I think what happened, as far as the show is concerned, I can tell you how I got into it. It was weird. I'm probably going to date myself. I'm not. I won't say my age, but what I will say is that I was taken one night to a bar called Discovery, and with my group of friends. Of course, I was underage,
Yeah.
and I was. They had to sneak me in, and the first thing I was told when I got there was to stay away from those girls. And upstairs, there were on the dance floor, Discovery, for anyone who remembers, it was a dance floor with all of this glass these glass mirrors and a metal dance floor. And I was told to stay away from those girls. Those girls were bad news.
Yeah.
And they were the drag queens. And, of course, you tell a kid not to touch the hot stove. They're going to go touch the hot stove. I was instantly drawn to the girls. I knew from a young age, from 8, that I felt, you know, different than, you know, my sister and my, you know, and family members. I knew that there was something different about me.
Mm-hmm.
So I instantly was drawn to those ladies, and then there was a show.
Yeah.
And so every week, the people that brought me there, of course, I was really young. So they, to their surprise, the next week and every week after, they showed up, and I was already there in the bar, in front of the jukebox downstairs dancing. And that's really funny. Kind of where it started. I think as far as me getting to the connection, I was taken to a show one night, and I saw Terry Vanessa Coleman. And I've seen a lot of wonderful queens, Linda Martell, Margot Davis, Robbie Lynn, Reva Devereaux, so many, Mahogany, so many wonderful, wonderful entertainers. But it wasn't until I saw Terry Vanessa Coleman that I realized that I wanted to do that. And that's how it started. I decided that I wanted to be on stage, and I wanted to be like Terry. And in my first few years of performing, I really did emulate her. I mean, anyone will tell you, I was the little Terry Vanessa Coleman copycat. I just really loved what she was doing. So basically, seeing her and entering the Thursday Night Talent Show, which she was the MC and Reva Devereaux was the co-MC, and I started doing the talent show. How I got to the show was, and it's weird to even say this, is that I started performing and people were mean to me. I mean, they were very mean to me. And I thought this then, because I don't think that's what it was. I, in the back of my head, had something to prove, and I was going to make those people love me. So the meaner they were, the harder I worked. And for many, many years, I did the Thursday Night Talent Show. And somehow me and a couple of my friends, Asia and Jacqueline State, all hired at the same time to be chorus girls, which were production girls for the Connection show. And that's how we got hired. Some girls came through and didn't make it, but me and Asia, we really stuck it out. And my goal getting into the show was to be just as great as Terry Vanessa Coleman. So I worked very hard for that because, let's face it, I was a young black kid about to make some serious changes in my life, and I saw the opportunity to not only be the best that I could be at what I was doing, but to be able to make some money to make the changes necessary and to have a place to do it. You know, not to have to work a job where I would go in one way and leave out another way.
Exactly.
So I was very thankful to have that. And the lines and the people who love me, just imagine this. You know, you don't think about it when you're doing it. But how lucky and blessed I had to be to have a safe place where people paid to come see me do what I love and to be able to make that transition in front of my community.
So during that time when you first started, and I think based on our conversation, based on what you're saying, it sounds like there was a time that when you first, I guess what I'm asking or I want to ask is, when, but at what point did you decide that you really were a girl and it sounds like that has already happened at this point.
Yes, early on in my childhood, I'm going to say maybe 6 to 8, I would run around in my sister's Wonder Woman underwear. I had a friend named Rhonda White, who I grew up with in a neighborhood that me and my mom and my sister lived in as kids, and I had lost contact with her as we moved away, and I happened to be with a really close friend of mine one night, and we used to do this thing where we walked everywhere when we were kids, and I met this girl, and her name was Rhonda. Now, I didn't give her a God-given name, but I met this girl, and we were sitting there talking, we were laughing and having a good time, and she says, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I was like, "I've never met you a day in my life. I don't know who you are." And she goes, "I'm such and such." And it blew my mind. Because honestly, growing up, I didn't know if it was going to be possible. I didn't know if those if it was just going to be one of those feelings where I was just going to have that feeling. I didn't know that it was possible to do. And seeing her, it opened my eyes to the possibility of being able to possibly live a life where I'm happy and true to myself. So she was the start. Carrie Vanessa Coleman was, you know, the proof that you could be a trans woman and be in control of, at that time, because there weren't a lot of places you could work as a trans woman in this city, be
hardly
your
any.
Own boss. Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I praise her highly because, I mean, she was the reason that it set me on my course because I was like, you know, she had a lovely home. You know, there were tons of people who respected her, you know, and I thought I would really like that for myself. And having coming from the family that I came from, regardless if they, you know, loved me and gave me all the support in the world, there's nothing like having your own and loving yourself and trying to make your own way without people feeling sorry for you.
Right, right, exactly, which happens way too much, in my opinion, but that's another show.
I just think that I really, truly believe that I think that I believe in fate, and I think that it was meant to happen. I was the youngest cast member hired at the Connection. I can say it now, it's no big deal. I was 16, about to turn 17 when I got hired at the Connection. But this is the thing that I want to point out about that. I was very young, but I was very unsupervised.
Mm-hmm.
And meaning at this point in my life, my father had married another woman, and we had moved to another area. And one of my stepsisters was having some personal problems in her life, and she was causing quite a bit of strife for my dad and my stepmom. So I got away with a lot because they were dealing with her. So I got to go see the shows. I got to hang out late at night because I was quite unsupervised. And if it hadn't been for getting hired at the Connection and being a part of that show, I could not tell you what my history would be at this moment.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, Simone, I have talked to trans women over the years, many of them did not perform, but a lot of them started out early being around performers, from the drag queens to the trans women or whatever. But, you know, I have heard almost a consistent story from so many of them is that the women, the older, and I'm going to say older women around you at that point, so like Terry Vanessa and women like that, Robbie and those girls. But I've heard so many things is they almost were like moms. They were really very good for these people as they were growing up. Did that happen in that community for you?
Oh, my goodness. More than just mothers, sisters, aunts, best friends. At that time, again, I came out in a time where it wasn't even really safe to walk by yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, we walked in groups, you know, we looked out for each other. So, these women had a whole lot more life that they lived in me. And they were bestowing upon me their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I was a kid. Did I listen to a lot of it? Probably not. Growing into who I've become, I see that knowledge that they gave me, I'm passing that along to other people because for what they did for me, they didn't have Facebook. They didn't have Instagram. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have the internet. They didn't even have doctors. They didn't even have doctors you could really go to get on hormones. I mean, that is a thing that's just happened in the last, what, 7-8 years.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
There was a network. There was a trust of girls who looked after each other. I mean, how I got on hormones. I didn't go to a doctor the first time I got on hormones. I was in a car crying about not feeling whole and trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And my girlfriend, Austria Andrews, gave me a bottle of hormones. And that set my journey. That was my journey, you know, that started it off. I mean, that's the sisterhood.
Yeah. Well, it's really, just because I've not performed, but I've been around the girls a lot and watch and backstage a few times and got to know some of you pretty good. But it's interesting is that I have admired many of you, if not, and I will say not all of you, some not so much, but yeah. But the amount of effort. One of the things I remember on this is I got to say this. One night it was over Starbase Q, and who's the girl? I think it was like two or three of the girls were performing. And it wasn't, tall, blonde. Well, that describes probably half of them. Anyway, Cece was one of them, and then Savannah was the other one. Margo Davis. It was
Margo,
the three of them out there. It was a Saturday night. I think it was their second show. And, of course, you know how Starbase was. It was the way it was configured and stuff. Not one person. It was like three people in the bar anyway. And it was not one person sitting watching them. And they come out, and I was sitting at the bar, and I can see them from the bar. But they came out and performed like they were performing in front of a million people. It was I know there's a lot of people not making very much money. They couldn't be making very much because wasn't anybody there. And it just amazes me the dedication, the passion that a lot of these performers that I see have, and I'm just I admire so many of them, so many of you.
Well, I think that honestly, you just learn in the beginning. You're always, I mean, especially I was taught from the get-go, is that when you walk on stage, that's your moment, and regardless if there's 100 people or 3 people, you perform to the best of your ability, because all it takes is one person to leave that room and talk about how awful you were. And those type of things continue on after that performance. So you just go out, you do what you were being paid to do. And sometimes it's not necessarily about the money. It's about being expressive and being able to tell a piece of your life through a song. And I, for one, will say this. For me personally, when I worked at The Connection, I was in many different states of just crazy. I mean, my life was trying to figure out where I was going to go, trying to find housing for myself, you know, living with groups of girls in the beginning, you know, trying to find my footing in the music. Was the reason that people like me so much is that I gave all of my emotion to the music, and I just lost myself in it. And I think that's partially part of the reason why I was successful there.
Yeah, I would say that watching you over the years, one of the things that you always, I mean, when you could tell based on the music, a lot of times it was going to be you. Of course, they would introduce that you were going to be out there, but the energy that you put to it was always impressive. I don't think I ever saw you, and I was pretty much there every Saturday for a couple of years. I don't think I ever saw you put on a bad performance, and I do remember seeing some other people putting on bad performances. I'll put it that way, but it was always fun. Now, we can talk more about this. I'm going to take a little bit of break, a call-in break. It'll be about a minute and a half. Give us a chance to take a breather. When we get back, what I want to do is I want to take us from the connection to currently you're a DJ, but kind of link us to where you left connections and not necessarily why, per se, unless you want to talk a little bit about that. But then because I don't know why, I just assume you wanted to be a DJ, but take us from there and what you're doing now. And I do want to talk about the MC stuff that you're going to do for us for the Trans Women National Banquet and a couple other things, but we'll take a little bit of a break. But one of the things I always ask my guests is, and we'll get to this at some point later, is if you could have dinner with two people, you know, this is that old question, dinner with two people, living or dead, who would that be and why? And so be thinking about that during the break, and we'll get to that a little bit later. So we'll be right back.
All righty.
Hey there. Did you know you could call in live to ask questions or even make comments at 914-205-5655? When you call, please be patient, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. You will be able to listen to the show live as you wait. The number is 914-205-5655. The number is also on the Blog Talk Radio page where you are currently listening live. You can also participate in a live chat on our Trans Women National Facebook page. The link is available on the Blog Talk Radio page or our website. Thank you, and back to the show. Welcome back to Prism Radio. We're part of TWN Radio, which is Trans Women National Radio. And the show is, Prism Radio is the second and fourth Monday of each month with Journeys with Julie is going to be the first and the third Monday of each month. And she does a similar type of talk show or interviewing and stuff with her. So anyway, we are with Victoria Simone Taylor. As I said, most people know her by Simone. She's around a lot nowadays and does a lot of DJ things, DJ Simone. And she is, I know for sure, because I see her the last couple Wednesdays, she's at the Chill Bar on Bardstown Road every Wednesday. I think it's 70s stuff that you're playing.
It's 70s, yeah. 80s, and 90s. It's a retro rewind.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And if you haven't been there, it is really a nice place, and she does a really good job. And it's definitely, especially with the weather and how it's going on, and they've done a really good job now. I don't think they did for a while, but you play inside, but you can hear the music outside, and so that's really, really nice. So we have Simone. So what we're going to do is kind of talk a little bit about it, as much as she wants to talk about it, is kind of where she went from connection to today. What kind of happened during all this time, and if you don't mind sharing.
I do not mind at all. I think I got into DJing because I was friends with a few DJs. I've always had, because of my father loving music, I've always gravitated towards people who like music, mostly DJs. Tom Bob Garner, who is Tom Remix, is one of my idols. Ben Mann, who owned Best Days Records. I would spend a lot of my teenage years on Sundays, every Sunday, in fact, for many, many years, searching for records in his record store. Marty Carlton and Don Bright and Mark Howard, these particular men were always around playing music. I had a deep respect for them. But it was a friend of mine who told me, I was going through a really tough time, and we can touch on this a little later if you choose to want to go there. I started to feel angry. I felt that I just felt that I wasn't being respected. I didn't feel that I was being taken seriously. And I wanted to, now looking back on it, rebel and try to be seen and heard. And, of course, again, I state that I was a very unsupervised child. And a lot of the things that I did were just out of being a kid in an adult space, you know? Not having adult figures. Well, I did have some adult figures that told me that I was wrong. A good friend of mine, Todd, Robbie Lynn, and Mahogany. I mean, I had those were people who did not, they weren't afraid to tell me when I'd done something that they didn't like. And so in the process of it all, I was told that I needed to get a hobby because I was wound up and I needed to have another avenue of expression. So I got hired through the Red Lounge, which was a nightclub that was here. It's now a restaurant on Frankfort Avenue. I think it's called Berenice now. I got hired by them to hand out beads for their Mardi Gras nights they were having. And so at the end of the night, the owner of the bar, or the manager actually, said that he had spoken to the owner and they wanted to hire me for an alternative night. And they asked me about what did they think I could bring to the bar. Well, because I didn't know really exactly what I could do to garner a crowd at this bar, I said I could be a hostess and invite my friends to come and see what happens. Well, they hired me. And about 2 days before we were supposed to launch, they had a meeting and told me that they had decided that because they loved the music I did on stage, that they wanted me to be the DJ. And that's how that began.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't something that I set out to do. Mm-hmm. It just happened. And, I mean, it happened naturally. I mean, it was just a situation where I played the music that I loved and people came to listen to it. And in the process, I started to learn how to work on CDJs, and that was amazing because I'd never really done that before. So we started Red Lounge, and I started TNA Tuesdays, and then I got another night once that became successful, which was a Thursday night situation. I moved from there to the Pink Door, which is where I credit – that's where I really credit becoming a DJ, because I learned quite a bit working there from other DJs. It was the first time that I've actually met other people outside of the DJs that I knew. And so learning from people who were open to, you know, teaching me about the profession, you know, and they were willing to give me a little bit of their expertise, not to mention you understand being trans and being a woman, a trans woman of color, how incredibly intimidating that can be for someone who doesn't know how to approach a person like me.
Right, right, yeah. The now there was one time when you were first started doing, and maybe this is the name of the place, but there was a place downtown Louisville. I thought you were doing it on Wednesday nights or Tuesday nights. It was very early, but there was a note, maybe it was later, but you did it was like a, and I, gosh, what was the name of the place? It was a very known, you know, mainstream straight bar, but they would do like a LGBT night. Maybe that's the place you're talking about.
Oh, you're talking about Proof.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Forgot.
I left the red lamp. I mean, not the red lamp. I left the pink door, and I went to work for Joey Wagner, who is a pretty big big deal in the city. He manages DJ K-Dog. He puts on a lot of parties. He asked me to come and do an alternative night. Me and a couple of friends wanted to do something different. And I went there, and we had 6 months there. They really tried to stick with us. But the truth is that the Pink Door was in its prime, and people just didn't really want to come downtown when, they knew the atmosphere at the Pink Door. It was a learning experience for me personally because it was a step outside of my normal business. And also dealing with the street community, which has been very kind to me and my career.
That was one of the early places that I went because I heard you were there and it was like an alternative night. And it was one of the places I was kind of and I think we all go through this a little bit, and as we mature in our womanhood, basically in our transitioning, it was one of the early places I went because that was straight, that was mainstream, that was outside the friendly places. And I knew that it was probably going to be friendly because it was an alternative night, but it was still a pretty scary thing at that time. And I went, and I think it was, I went 1 week, and it was pretty nice, but then the next week was, you were gone. And so I'm in there by myself walking around, and so it was a little bit more intimidating. But anyway, it was pretty cool.
I think that for any trans woman trying to figure out where she can go to feel accepted, I think that Louisville has grown leaps and bounds when it comes to that. But it's you and your own personal journey and where you are that usually causes the friction as far as feeling comfortable. Because as soon as you're comfortable with you, you can go anywhere you want. Now, let's not be stupid about it. I mean, if you get a tingling that something ain't right, generally it is, and you need to just get on out, you know. But I think we as a city, we've come so far. I mean, if you think about Louisville and you think about Kentucky in general, and especially in my case, I'm very proud to say that when my DJ career started, I was in a magazine called The Party Crasher, where they went to different bars and did profiles on DJs and popular nights. The person who did the article was very knowledgeable about who and what I was and referred to me accordingly. The community here has been good to me. The Leo Weekly has been incredible to me. Louisville Magazine has been incredible to me. The establishments have been incredible to me. And in the beginning, I have to say, I got hired for jobs in the beginning because of the gimmick, because I was trans. But I think the talent won over the gimmick. And I think that that is the reason why I do so well. And I think that I connect with people. I may be trans, and I may be a trans woman of color, but I think that for me, the music has been the gateway to getting to know people and having people help understand, you know, who I am and where I come from.
Yeah, exactly. And a cool thing I'm sure you experience, and I just thought about, as a performer, you had a relationship with people very, very quickly, and I'm sure there was people that obviously you talked to between shows, but as a DJ, you probably get a chance to actually talk to people more and get to know people a little bit better.
Yeah, people come up to me, especially with the retro thing that I've been doing here. It creates a dialogue. People ask me for songs. If I don't have them, I write them down, and I come home and I'll have them for the next week.
Oh, cool.
People talk about the experiences that they had with certain music and how certain music made them feel. Or, you know, a certain song reminds them of a family member that they lost or a partner that they lost. And so that opens up, that just opens up dialogue to, you know, to get to know people. And, you know, the best piece of advice I think I was, that I was ever given came from a good friend of mine. His name is Todd. And that was very, very, he was very, very instrumental in helping me get to the places that I got to as a performer. And I was a very, like I said, just young and just not paying attention, just a spoiled brat, really. And he told me, he said, with the attitude that you have, how do you expect to be popular? How do you expect for people to love you and love what you're doing if you treat people the way that you do? He said, how are you going to be a star with no fans? And that was the best piece of advice that I've ever gotten because I got it. You know, he told me the truth. I was like, you're right. I have to remember that people work hard for their money and they work hard to come out and enjoy themselves. And why should I add to their misery? And so I wanted to be better for that. And I think because of that advice, I quickly learned how to make sure that I greeted everyone and treated everybody the way that I wanted to be treated. And if there was a situation that I didn't particularly care for, I would just excuse myself out of it. And by no means am I perfect. This is a very difficult life to live, especially when you encounter people who don't understand who you are, or where you're trying to go. And that is coming from my gay community and my straight community. There are just people who just don't get it. So I try to allow myself to be as extremely visible, extremely approachable. If you're approaching me respectfully, to make sure that, you know, if people have questions, they can ask me. Trying to be the best person that I can be, because I'm so visible to everyone in the community. I mean, I didn't want to be a role model, but I mean, sometimes there are just things that you can't escape.
Exactly. And I will tell you, I think two things as I'm hearing more about you is that the sad part is not only were you thrusted as a young girl in a world of adults, but people started probably expecting you to behave as that adult without knowing that you were young.
Right.
So that they would probably, because, you know, it's, I think it happens a lot in the entertainment world overall when you see these child stars and they start doing stupid stuff because they have all this money, which that wasn't the case, I'm sure, in your situation necessarily. But you are put in this situation where you're so visible and you have the opportunity to mess up so many times, but with everybody seeing that. Yeah. And it's a very harsh thing. And you see a lot of young entertainers not do that very well and never recover. In your situation, you had good people giving you really good advice and it helped you grow and mature into the woman you are today.
Yes, but I also have to say this. I mean, luckily for me, even being as young as I was smart. I had a great, even though my father didn't understand my choices, he never said I was wrong. You know, he always had some very wise advice. And because I didn't want to let him down, my ear was always open. And I had Todd and Robbie and, Mahogany. Yeah, I mean, I had good people around me that would check me if I got to be too much. But the truth is that when people come, especially back then, it's different now. But there were times when I didn't have the best self-esteem. And I was really trying to figure out exactly what this world was going to do to me because, you know, I was Black and trans. And there weren't a lot of opportunities for girls like myself. And I wanted to be the best at whatever it is I was doing because I was Black and trans. So I knew that when I went to work, I had to be better than everybody because I wanted them to see what I was bringing to the world. And I worked my butt off for that because I really felt like I could be accepted by people if they saw my hard work and dedication.
Very cool.
So
Very cool.
I think that that's where that came from.
Yeah. Now, I want to get to a couple more things. But let's get to let me do this break. And then as soon as we come back, we're going to, I'm going to ask about the dinner, the two people you would have dinner with. And we're going to talk about the banquet a little bit. And I got a commercial here about the banquet. Then we're going to talk about that. Then we'll talk about the banquet. And then one other thing we got to touch on a little bit. So we'll be back in a minute. Hello, this is Holly, and I'm reminding you about this year's Trans Women National Banquet. Wait, you didn't know about it? What is our first annual awards banquet during the Louisville Transgender Week of Awareness in November? It will be held at the Hyatt Regency in Louisville with none other than the internationally famous Dr. Marcy Bowers as our keynote speaker on November 21st at 6:30 p.m. We are pleased to announce that Brian Buford and Chris Hartman will receive our very first Ally Award, and Dawn Wilson will receive our very first TWN Purple Butterfly Award. Jason Gardner and Simone Taylor will be our MCs for the evening, of which will be worth the ticket price alone. The banquet will be held at the gorgeous Banquet Hall at the Hyatt Regency in Louisville, and our reception will be at the top of the Hyatt in a breathtaking revolving restaurant called The Spire. Tickets are on sale now. Please go to our website at transwomennational.org for more information. Thank you and hope to see you there. Okay, and welcome back. We're with Simone. As if you heard the commercial just a minute ago, that is the very same Simone that's going to be with Jason Gardner as our MC for our Trans Women National Banquet. It is the first banquet that Trans Women National Banquet. Honestly, I think in talking to a lot of friends, it probably is, as far as anybody knows, the only awards banquet specifically for transgender in the country. And it's going to be huge. And I will tell you that, and just so people know, if you're listening and stuff, we are charging ticket prices to pay for the event. It's at the Hyatt. We've got a lot of stuff going on, and I'm saying it's not cheap. So we will not be making money. This is not a fundraising event. We hope that we break even. So we do need to get tickets and everything, but it's going to be, we'll have a reception before, we'll have an amazing dinner with the speakers. And again, I'm going to hopefully very, very soon set up Jason and Simone. We're going to get together. And I really want to, Simone, is give, I don't want to go all night with this event, so we got to be really careful. But I want to give you and Jason as much freedom, understanding that there is a time limit, but as much freedom to be yourselves, because I didn't ask you two to be there because just to read stuff. I want you all to be yourselves because you both will be entertaining in that way. So we'll talk about that. And I'm really, if it was up to me, I'd just say take over and do it because I think it would be incredible. But the worst thing would happen because it's going to be a long night anyway. But anyway, if you're listening, get a chance, check out our websites, transwomennational.org, The link is on the site. If you're listening to this show, most likely you have the Blog Talk Radio page up, and there's a link there, and get a little bit more information. If you need anything, just let us know at info@transwomennational.org. Again, you can call in live, 914-205-5655. We have Simone Taylor, Victoria Simone Taylor, here as our very special guest. And one of the things we're talking about, Simone, is if you had dinner with two people, living or passed away, dead, who would they be and why?
Marsha P. Johnson and Michael Jackson. Marsha P. Johnson, simply because she was an original. She just lived by her heart, and her story is just so amazing that here's a person, a black trans person, at the time where there wasn't a real definition of what and who she was, really. There wasn't any really real wordage for exactly who and what she was. They called her a transvestite, but we know now that she was transgender. And so I just would love to sit down with her and know more about her life than the little bit that I've gotten to see via documentaries on YouTube and stories from people who knew her.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson, because Michael Jackson was put in a very difficult position from childhood to adulthood, and to be in a business where people continually build you up to break you down, to build you up to break you down. And he got to a point where he was so starved for perfection to give to his fans the best that he could do. He was using a drug to put him to sleep so he couldn't dream, to turn his brain off. And as a creative, I understand the process, because when you're working hard on something, whether it be music, dancing, or putting together a package for a show, you don't sleep well at night because your mind keeps going about things that you could do better. And I believe that, you know, a lot of people were judgmental about the Pro Bowl, but I think that he needed that. I'm not saying that it was right. I'm just saying that I understand the need to turn your brain off, to sleep, not to think. And those are the two people that I find very interesting, and I would like to sit down with and talk about their lives and what made them who they were.
Well, and clearly one of the most amazing entertainers of forever, Michael.
I'll be another Michael Jackson.
No. I mean, the sheer talent that he clearly was born with at a very early age, and he continued that. And clearly, and at least in a situation, is that you can almost identify a little bit with his experience as a young entertainer and your experience as a young entertainer and the expectations. And the what drives me crazy about people is how they condemn people. Like, first of all, not only is there never going to be an entertainer like that, There's probably never anybody that's ever going to exist in a life like that, and to even be able to know what it was like to be him, and to judge the things that he did. It's really sad, because society puts all this on you to begin with, and it's a sad story. It's horrible, and you wish that there would have been somebody. It seems to me, just looking at from a very, very far outside, it seems to me that happens in those situations a lot of times, is they don't have those people like you had that was able to say to him, Michael, you need to get your act together. Maybe he did, but at least didn't listen to him enough to say,
Go ahead. You have to think about it. I mean, when you reach a certain amount of success and there are people there telling you that everything that you do is right because they have something to gain from it, of course it's going to be catastrophic, because you start to believe that. I always say that the people that you start with, especially the close people you start with, you try to hang on to that because you want to keep someone in your circle, or two or three people in your circle, that don't care about who you've become. They care about you as a person, and they don't feel like they're stepping over any lines if they tell you, I love you, girl, but you were wrong for saying that, or I don't agree with what you said. And I have a girlfriend, Kendra, who we spend a lot of time on the phone talking to each other. We have really different schedules, but every now and then we get to see each other. She is she's amazing when it comes to giving me another perspective and not allowing me to be judgmental. And she calls me on it. So it's just really nice to have that. So that way I don't get stuck in my own bad habits or get stuck in my own bad headspace. So, I mean, I truly feel for him. But the thing I can say is with him and Whitney Houston, those are just cautionary tales of what not to do. And I think no one recognizes that Whitney Houston was saying for years how unhappy she was, and no one was listening. So, I mean, hopefully for me, I have good people around me. But in regards to where I was trying to go with that, there were people in my career when I was a performer that, you know, I performed the night my dad died. I shouldn't have done that. I went to work. I went to work the night we buried my dad. I went to work.
Oh, my gosh.
There were people who were benefiting from making sure that I got to work, you know. There are lots of stories. There are lots of stories in my life about the things that happened to me when I was a performer. But I think the one thing that I'm most grateful for is that I took those experiences and I applied them to how I want to live my life. Yes, am I perfect? I'm not, and I'm far from perfect. I have my quirks. I have my things that I'm working on. And being trans women, we often, we're constantly reminded that we're trans.
Right. Right.
We're constantly reminded that we're trans women of color. We're often reminded of our limits. And so I want to break that. That is the reason why I'm choosing to be visible within this community, because if I can do this, if I can make a living upon the limits that were placed on me and be successful in the Bible Belt, then anyone can live their dream and anyone can be what they want to be. It's possible for anyone.
It is, yeah. But on top of that, the effort, clearly you've had to, as you said, you felt, which was probably very, very true, that you had to work harder than other people just to get where you are. It didn't come real easy.
But has anything in this country come easy for anyone who is not a straight white male?
Yeah, that's true.
Seriously, you have to look at it that way. We've as black people, we've fought to, you know, just be treated fairly. Women are fighting right now about their reproductive parts.
Yeah.
Right now, the immigration situation in this country is crazy. Everybody's fighting to be heard. And that's what it is in this country. The gays being able to be married, that's another fight that's been going on since I was a kid. I mean, these are the things that you have to fight for what you want in this country. And it's worth it, because if anything my legacy can be is that if I die tomorrow, I hope that someone can say that because of her, I had the courage to be who I wanted to be, that I didn't lie and I didn't sneak around and pretend to be something that I wasn't. And to make a life for yourself, I mean, it's important. The more people who accept themselves for who they are, it makes this movement even better, because I think, honestly, together we're gonna it together it's gonna be if we work together, it's gonna be good for us. We can't
mm-hmm.
continue to be fragmented, and that is
exactly.
that's my journey. That's my
yeah,
journey.
Exactly. Yeah, that is the thing that if we could change that, even make it better. We don't have to make it perfect. If we could make that better, it would be a huge thing, no doubt.
But,
go ahead.
But in our trans community too, I think we also need to be more accepting of each other. And
mm-hmm.
I know that for a while there had been comments about certain trans women. Well, from conversations I've had, I don't know this. It wasn't said to me when I was doing it, but there are some girls saying that the trans girls who do shows are looked down upon by trans girls who don't do shows. And the truth
mm-hmm.
is, whichever way you choose to go is the best way for you. You know,
exactly.
I know that when I got my first job as a female, I was horrified at the whole idea of going through this process, about the interview, about disclosing that I was trans,
mm-hmm.
and the what I wore for my interview, and my hair and my makeup. And my first job as a female was at Perfidian Financial in the car department. And I remember it like it was yesterday, because I fretted all night long, nervous about how I looked, how I was going to be perceived. And,
mm-hmm.
Of course, back then I loved big hair, so of course my hair was huge. and I wore this really nice outfit. It was a little too tight looking back on it now. But I get to the interview, and I had a female interviewer, and we talked about the basics. She went over my information, and then I said, I just would like to tell you that I'm transgender, and I hope that's not going to be a problem, but I feel I need to let you know that before, you know, we go any further. And
mm-hmm.
she looked me in my face and said, can you show up to work on time? I said, yes. And the rest of the interview, we talked about makeup and hair.
Oh, well, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so my experience has been good for me, because I've chosen to be honest about it. I've chosen to be upfront about it. And I really believe that if more people get to know trans folk and have conversations with them, they will find that we're all basically the same.
Yeah, I agree. I will tell you, being on this side of the stage, I have been in conversations about what you're talking about. And I've heard people say stuff about performers overall not being good for the transgender community. And so I said, well, you're talking about a bunch of different things, first of all. And I said, in my opinion, first of all, they're not going anywhere. They exist. They've been existing long before you, and they're going to be existing long after that. I said, in my opinion, what is good for the transgender community is people being positive and true to themselves. I said, and then it's going to get better. And I said, because you can't shape everybody into one thing. And I refer to this, of course, and I will probably tell my age a little bit, but I grew up in the late 50s and 60s. And one of the things that I experienced growing up in the white community is hearing about black people. I grew up in an all-white community, and it was from my parents, my grandparents, and all of my relatives, and even TV and everything in the 50s and 60s basically said at least black men were, the characteristics was typically uneducated, not very smart, and lazy. And, you know, there are actually uneducated, lazy black people today. But what happened was there were a lot of smart, hardworking black people emerging in the world, at least, well, they've always been. But people were showing them on TV, and they were interviewing them. And there were these really, really amazing African-American people being portrayed in real life. And now you're seeing these positive images that you didn't see before that have, that's always existed and was breaking down these stereotypes. Now, again, does that mean the stereotype people doesn't exist in all of these groups? Yes, there's always going to be people like that that's lazy no matter what race or gender. And
you have to really consider the source too. You think about
right,
it
exactly.
A country that brought people over here and enslaved them, and would dare make a comment that black folks are lazy and angry. Well, when they were being forced to do free labor and being forced, the education was being held away from them. This country has a lot. This country has a lot of awful history, and it's important. It's important for us to remember that, to make sure that people don't forget that, but also to blaze our own trails. Because I can tell you now, I grew up in a home where my father made sure to tell me that you make your own decisions and you treat people the way that you want to be treated. And if someone is not good to you, you leave that person alone. But if someone is good to you, no matter their race or gender, you treat them the way that you want to be treated. And it's really important. It's really important to remember that. I mean, this country, especially with the rate that trans women of color are being murdered, it's awful. And there's no education for these men, especially some of the men that are committing these crimes. There's no support for these men that are attracted to trans women. There's no groups for them. There's no education in the school. There's no education in the schools for anyone about the attraction to trans women, how to categorize us, how to approach us, and how to deal with the fact that for many, 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 many years, maybe even, I mean, I know it's centuries, that men have been attracted to trans women. And if we can erase the shame, the killings will stop. But because there's such a tabooness to it, such a dirty aspect to it, that, you know, that people have been taught, just like you were just saying about being told that those that people were lazy and, you know, and angry or whatever. We have to educate, because what's happening is the killings are coming out of shame. And you know, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say that I have had conversation after conversation with people trans women, with trans women of color, with people of color. You know, all kinds of things. And Simone, that is probably the simplest, but also the most direct solution. I mean, that I think, I mean, again, you probably thinking, you know, you probably been saying this for 100 years or whatever, but because one of the things I keep wondering, what do we have to do to stop this? And I think sometimes we look at, we look at the wrong thing, and I think what you're looking at is exactly the reason this happens and what has to stop. It's continue. I'm sorry, but it's amazing. That's really good.
Well, I just know that I've dated a lot of men who are straight, and I understand the process. I've dealt with men who could deal. I've dealt with men who couldn't. There is a certain type of shame to admitting that you care for a trans woman, because up until now, up until Candace King, Laverne Cox, Carmen Carrera, Gina Rinko, and all of the other girls that are Janet Mock, all of these women, Caitlyn Jenner, all of these women who are making this impact, that we're not sex workers, that we're more than the sex work that's been placed upon us, that we are educated, we're smart, we're beautiful, we're running businesses. It's no longer, the shame is being lifted from within our community, because we are showing the world that we're more than just what someone says about us being taboo, which was usually sex work back in those days. So I think that for us as a community of women growing, we know that there's no shame to loving us.
Right. Exactly.
We're lifting each other. We're lifting each other up. It's mm-hmm. the men that we have finding education for, because it's just like interracial marriage and all of those things. It's when the education is there, when people know better, they do better. And I think that that's what needs to happen as far as teaching people, whether it be the men who are attracted to us or people, physicians trying to deal with having trans patients. There has to be some sort of education. If there's not going to be any education, we're not going to continue. We're not going to grow.
Right.
And I think that
right.
that is the reason that you are mm-hmm. seeing trans acceptance at staggering rates. I mean, I can tell you now, I never thought I'd see a black president. I never mm-hmm. thought I'd see a trans woman on television playing a lead role.
I
never thought that Laverne Cox would be this megastar, practically the ambassador to all things trans, because, mm-hmm. I mean, people, she's just one of those people. She's enlightened. She's intelligent. She speaks from the heart. And because of these women, and yourself included, putting yourself out there to help the cause, I think that that's the reason why our movement is moving in the way that it is, because we are much more than taboo.
Yes. Amen, sister.
I believe that, and I would hope that with the work that I do, it may not be big on the scale of Laverne Cox or any of the ladies that I mentioned, but my visibility is important because I am someone who's well known in this city. Mm-hmm. And love me or hate me, I'm a part of the bigger picture, and I am going to do my part to make sure that, at least for me, I'm putting myself out there in case there's a young trans woman of color who wants to do what I'm doing or just wants to have the courage to be. And I really truly believe that that's what my calling has truly become.
Well, and you continue to be inspirational. You continue to be strong and courageous, and what you do for the community. And again, we talk all the time, and I know that you're out doing your thing, and you've got all your support people and stuff. But in a lot of communities and a lot of conversations I have, we talk all the time is that it is the ambassadors, or the, if you want to do the disciples, of the trans community, out one at a time telling family and friends. And you've got your people that you're talking to, and I've got my people I'm talking to, and Janet Mock has her people she's talking to, and we all are just all of these going out here. It just continues to grow. And I saw a statistic recently. It was about 3 months ago to maybe 6 months ago, that said that they estimated that 18% of the United States population knew a trans person, at least knew that the person was trans. And they said that that percentage, even in the last 6 months, has grown to like 28 to 30% now. And just that amount of time. Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing is that, but I tell you, Simone, I think what has happened is because there are trans women like yourself that's been walking these streets, walking this out in this community and existing in this community, not just on stage, but at the stores, at the shops, on the corner, not a corner, that's going to imply something, but you know, out in the world, existing years before I took a step out and did anything. And the people like yourself and people like Dawn Wilson and people like Monica Roberts and the trans women before that's been out there doing that has paved the way for us to be able to now venture out and go to places that maybe we were afraid to, we wouldn't have done 15 years ago. and it just keeps on getting better. And I thank you for everything you've done for us.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you for saying that, and I appreciate you for, you know, giving yourself to trying to make a presence and a place for us in the community. And I think that you, when you mentioned my work on Wednesday, that Chilbar, you didn't mention the fact that you guys meet there every Wednesday at 6, and it's a safe place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. It's a safe place, and they have, a business that is employee. They have a trans woman of color and they're employed. And I work at several businesses, straight and gay in this city, that I work for, that they have a trans woman of color under their employee. And I work at a lot of different places. And it's important to acknowledge that, because that means that if I can do it, so can you. And my mom always said, the only thing people can say is no, but you have to ask first. Because you'll never know if you don't ask.
That's true. That is true. That is true. Well, Simone, I really appreciate you being on the show tonight.
Thank you.
And we will, again, make sure everybody is aware. You can see Simone on Wednesday nights at, I think you start, what, at 7 or 7:30 at Chill?
I thought it was 7.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday at 7. Sorry.
Okay. Where else do you want to let people know that they can come and hear you?
Oh, yeah. I work every Sunday at Nowhere Bar Louisville. I go on at 10 o'clock. We usually hang out there and play flip cup or cornhole early on before I go on at 10. I mean, if that's your thing. We're really, really family-oriented at Nowhere Bar, and we just like to have a good time there. I'm doing a Friday night residency in Cincinnati. I've been there 4 years at a bar called Below Zero Lounge. And you can kind of catch me here and there in Louisville and every Saturday of every last Saturday of the month at Pride Bar in Indiana. I perform the last Saturday of every month at Pride Bar in Indiana. That's a new thing that I've just started doing. So I'm going to get that out there as well.
Yeah, neat. Yeah, the Pride Bar in New Albany, it's actually just about a mile from me, and it's the first LGBT bar in New Albany ever, I think.
Mm-hmm. Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a it's a neat little place, and if you get a chance, get out there. It's really nice, and again, Chill Bar has been amazing good to our group. And we get out there every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. We'll be out there this Wednesday, and they've got a patio out there. And the kind of neat thing is that we will sit out there, and people on Bardstown Road will walk by, and I don't know if they know or whatever and stuff, but it's kind of like a mixing of that's the cool thing about Bardstown Road. It's a very melting pot of a lot of people, I guess, so to speak. So. Was fantastic, Simone, and we'll see you Wednesday night. Appreciate everything that you do, and we'll get together sometime soon, hopefully really, really soon, and with you and Jason, and we can kind of talk a little bit more about November 21st.
I would love that, and thank you again for including me, and I hope that my story can help somebody, and I hope that it was useful to somebody and enlightening to other people who don't know anything about me.
Well, let me, I'm going to throw this out, and I did not ask you this before, so I'm not going to give out any information, but I would ask if, because, you know, there has to be, because it, and although a lot of people don't call in, that's typical of the show, and there's but there's a lot of times there'll be a lot of people listening to this show over the next couple months, because they can listen to it after tonight. But there's going to be probably somebody out there that would like to have someone to talk to that's been there, done that type of a thing. Would you be like, could they contact you on Facebook, or is there a way that you want to open yourself that way, or you want to just have them contact me and then I can screen them or anything like that?
They can send me a message. I have my fan page is Victoria Simone Taylor. They can send me a message through my Facebook, and we can start a conversation that way. If I feel like it's a good situation, then I will friend them. I think that I'm open enough to be able to figure out if I'm dealing with something crazy.
Well, that's the thing is that
you know
one of the,
exactly what I mean when I say that.
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah, that's and I tell you what happens, Simone, is and you know, you develop such a radar on this, and it's like there's and I couldn't even tell you what it is that is said, but every so often somebody will talk to you. You it's like all these red flags pop up and going, I don't want any part of this.
You're cutting out. I didn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Okay,
I may be.
It was cutting out.
Oh, can you hear me now? Hello.
Hello. I'm sorry. It's still cutting out. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Can you? I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. Good. Well, we were just talking. One of the things is that I would maybe what we can do is maybe in a few months or something like that is get. Because I was just, and I know I wanted to shut the show down here, but I was some of the things you were talking about, especially with the shame and the education part, is I think one of the things, at least that our group, Sienna and now Trans Women National, were guilty of is because we don't want to be seen as a sex, so to speak, like a dating site or whatever, we almost always avoid the talk sexuality type stuff. I think that's been a mistake. I think if we can talk educationally about dating trans women, because you're seeing it more and more on Facebook, and it's beginning to be a pretty good topic, and maybe get two or three of us together at some point is maybe different experiences and maybe have a show on sexuality and dating and that type of thing. I don't know if you'd be interested in that, but that would be a really interesting topic.
I think it would be great because, I mean, I think that at this point right now, the rumor is at this moment is that Keanu Reeves is dating a trans actress from that show Sense 8.
Oh,
there has
cool.
been video. There's been video of them kissing at some restaurant. And so, I think, but that's a very important thing because it's going
it
to
is.
Take a man like him. It's going to take mm-hmm. a big star like him to help eliminate the shame of loving a trans woman. And
right.
I think Laverne has been very passionate. I, even with Carmen Carrera being on Couples Therapy,
mm-hmm.
I think that's going to help us. I think that the conversation about sexuality and dating is important because
mm-hmm.
you're seeing more of our lives opened up on television. You know, that was like, remember when Queer as Folk came out and it was such a big impact because
it was.
People didn't want to say that they wanted to know what was going on inside gay bedrooms, but
mm-hmm.
they tuned in to watch it. And although
right.
it wasn't an exact representation of our
mm-hmm.
entire community,
mm-hmm.
It was eye-opening in some ways because people got some of those questions answered via a TV show, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't want to feel like they were being intrusive. I'm asking someone about what goes on in their bedroom. So I think it is great. You know what I would love to do? I would love to find an avenue where we could possibly have a show where we can videotape roundtable discussions. Seriously.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. Back 2 years ago, I did a thing called Transview, and I had Alana Montgomery, Bijan St. James, and a couple other younger trans people. And we talked about a lot of things. We did talk, but that's what we need is like four of us. And what I did is we put it on YouTube. It's actually out there now, most of that show. And we had a crowd. It was a pretty good crowd. We invited conversation, and it was really good. So let me, if you want me to, I can put that together and we can maybe, I don't think we can do it in the next month, but we can do it in a couple months probably.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I think that hearing us talk on the radio is great, but being able to have, it could really be like a trans view, you
uh-huh.
know, having
right.
different women from different trans women from different walks of life, being able to talk about their experiences. I mean, I can tell you honestly that we are living in a great time where being a trans woman doesn't equal you being loose, you know?
Right.
And for many years, you know, people just often thought that the only way we were visible was through sex work. And
right.
so to see us as models and actresses and doctors mm-hmm. and all of these things that we are
mm-hmm.
is important for us. And I don't think that there's anything like it on television. And I think that it would be a great way to reach out to people nationally to get our story told.
Yeah. I'm going to get it done, and you will be on it, and I will let you know once we get it going. I've been wanting to do something again like that, and that would be perfect. I think four of us talking about that. I would like to get a kind of diverse, four different kind of experiences, but I think it has to be at least focused on dating men, because I think that's the part too. Because if we don't do that, we can talk about 1,000 different things. It has to be kind of narrowly focused, at least in that. So
we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. I think it's important. I think that I never thought, just to put this out there, I never thought that there wasn't going to be a man that loved me because my daddy loved me. And I knew that if my daddy loved me, someone would love me in the way that I felt about my father. And I really think what's changed over the years for me is that I'm suffering personally. This is just my own.
Mm-hmm.
Is the more successful I've gotten in what I'm doing made it harder for me to date than me being trans, because there's a certain amount of things I have. There's a certain amount of things I have to give up to be a DJ.
Right.
I work at night.
Right. Yeah. True.
I have this crazy schedule. I'm always doing something. When I go out, people want to mm-hmm. talk to me. It's very hard for a man, especially mm-hmm. a man who's not really comfortable with the whole idea in the first place,
mm-hmm.
to deal mm-hmm. with that. And then you have men, whether they be gay or whatever, coming up to you. It's very hard for them to process that. So I think this conversation is going to be great.
It'll be fun. It'll be cool, and it will mean a lot. It would be very, very important. So perfect. I'm excited. I'll let you know as we get along and get this going. And I actually, I can't tell you details, but I think they may be interested. I recently had a meeting with a couple of people talking about a reality show. It wasn't a trans reality show. It's an LGBT one. But I'm not going to tell you details about it because it's in a formation, and I didn't sign any kind of waiver or anything like that, but I still don't want to, because I think their idea is pretty cool. But they may be interested in possibly being part of this also. So I'll talk to them and see if we can get them, because I think they one of the persons there has been involved in national TV production and movies and stuff. So maybe we can really make this kind of cool. So either way, even if we just put it on an iPhone and on YouTube, it'll still be good. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to working with you again and getting with you soon to talk about the banquet. We're going to have such an amazing night, and I'm looking forward to it.
It will be fun. And thank you again, and we will talk to you soon, and have a good evening. We'll see you Wednesday.
All right. You have a good night, and thank you again for having me.
Yeah, thank you. All right. That was Victoria Simone Taylor, and as you tell, she has done a lot of amazing things for the community, with the community, during the part of it. Her story is pretty cool. Hopefully we'll get to know her more as we go along. Don't forget that tickets are on sale now at transwomennational.org, and you can go get your tickets there. We need to get these things sold. It's going to be a great evening, and it goes to a really, really good cause. Trans Women National exists for support and education for transgender people, and although it's called Trans Women, we do a lot of work for all of the trans people under the umbrella of trans. So it's a national organization for that reason. So with that said, also the Trans Women National Meeting will not happen this month, since that is going to be the 21st normally, and we have our banquet on the 21st. So again, I appreciate everybody listening. If you are listening later, if you're listening to the recording, you can listen to any of the previous shows on the Blog Talk Radio page. You all have a good evening, and we will talk to you soon. Good night. So that is our show for this evening, and I'm really happy you were able to join us. I would love to hear from you with any comments you may have, and there are many ways you can do that by going to our Contact Us page on our website at www.transwomennational.org. Don't forget, you can subscribe to our shows on our Blog Talk Radio page and or subscribe to our shows on iTunes. You can also know that you can listen to any of our past shows on the Blog Talk Radio page on your phone, your tablet, or your computer. More information on this is on our transwomennational.org website. We will be here most Monday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, so I hope to hear from you soon, and trust where your heart takes you. Thank you.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but my time is finally near. And I can feel a change in the wind right now. Nothing's my way.